Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh, is daf Pei Vav. And of course, many of us have a very special feeling about daf Pei Vav from our childhood and so on, a certain bear that stays with us under all circumstances. And therefore, we can concentrate on the issue. So remember that yesterday we were talking about Adover Shaloba Liolam in terms of the neder of a woman who is making the neder now. And we said that the case is that she says, when I am mitgareshet, this is like a really positively inclined woman, when we get divorced, so then this neder should be chal, and my yadayim will be mekudashot, so to speak, l'shamayim vis-a-vis you, and anything that I make is going to be usher on you, right? So the question that we had yesterday was, we were trying to avoid the problem of if you hold ein adam magdish dover shelo b'le'olam, how in the world does this neder become chal, since you cannot be magdish now? If you cannot be magdish now, isn't that the definition of a dover shelo b'le'olam? So how did you really address the problem? That's what we left off with yesterday, and that's why Richie was up. He simply couldn't fall asleep, was waiting to hear what exactly we could offer as a solution to this. I'm really sorry for leaving you hanging like that yesterday, Rich, but soon you'll be able to get a nap. We'll make up for it. And so we're holding today right at the top, because Rabbi Law has an idea. Rabbi Law, I can tell you why it would be chal anyway. Now, gentlemen, before we start this very detailed examination of going back and forth, as the Gemara is going to do, about every single example and why it's different, let's give a little bit of thought to the issue. What happened over here is that the woman is mishu'ubedet labal. And since she's mishu'ubedet labal, so the Gemara has a problem with that being considered to be a dover shelo b'olam. Why? Because now she can't do it. Why can't she do it? Because her hands are mishubanot, and she has agreed to give everything that she produces to the Baal. Now that is the peirot. The actual body of the hands are there, and they're hers, except that she doesn't have the power to use them to be magdish. The Gemara is assuming that that is a dover shelo b'le'olam. Now, there's an obvious solution to that, because what we could say is that the hands are definitely ba'olam, and that the only issue over here is her inability to access them. But the comeback to that, of course, is that the way that we've been defining a dover shelo ba'olam until now does not distinguish between the factual existence of the item or the ability to interact with the item, right? So in other words, what we talked about, telling a woman, when you become Jewish, I am now magdish you to be chal when you become Jewish. The woman certainly exists, but the ability to create kedushin does not exist. And we consider that to be part of the din of a dover shelo b'le'olam. And therefore, the same thing should be true over here. And that's what the Gemara's question is. The bottom line is, she cannot do what it is that she wants to happen later. She can't do it now. And the reason she can't do it now is because she is mishu'ubedet to the husband. Now, there are other cases where there actually is an ability to do something that is lo bali olam, and it's only, however, in the event that you could do it now but won't be able to do it later. Let's take the case. As Rabbi Law says, suppose somebody would say, I am about to sell you a field. Now, I want to sell it with the understanding that when I buy it back from you, that at that point, it should become Kodesh. Now, wouldn't that work, says Rabbi Law? It should work. I mean, we don't have any proof that it works. But Rabbi Law says it should work. Why? Because currently the field is his. In 5 minutes when he signs the sale contract, it's true that the field won't be his, but that doesn't make any difference because right now it's actually his. Are we agreed that that will work? Thank you, says Rabbi Law. then why is this any different? Now you look at Rabbi Law and you scratch your head. Why is this any different? How in the world is it the same? Over here, the problem is that her hands are currently mishubed at the Baal. It's not that she's saying before they're married that when I get married and then we get divorced, then your hands should, that I agree. I mean, that would be similar to the case you're bringing. But here, they are married already, and her hands are mishubedot to the Baal. This equation by Rabbi Law is what engenders the questions that I want to raise in your mind. Okay, so let's talk about the different factors that go into weakening your position when it's a davar shelo b'le'olam. So in the case that Rabbi Law mentions, what happens is that when the sale of the field in 5 minutes from now takes place, that person who previously was the owner of the field has absolutely neither of the things that define a davar shelo b'le'olam. He doesn't own the field at all, and he doesn't have rights to anything in the field. So for the next 10 years, it's not his. Now you're telling me when he reacquires it, that therefore it's meaningful that he could do it now? I understand. For all intents and purposes, this is a completely different field. And yet you're agreeing that that would in fact allow him to be makdish the field. So let me show you, says Rabbi Law, why I think that we can compare the cases, okay? And when I say we can compare the cases, I do not mean that they're comparable literally. I mean that they're comparable in terms of an abstract analysis of factors. Because here's what I believe. The woman, when she goes ahead and gives her hands to her husband, and they've already been given, right? So in other words, we understand Rabbi Law would never have said something stupid like a guy who sells a field and then says to the guy, oh, by the way, this field that I sold you, if I ever buy it back, that then it should be Kodesh. Rabbi Law would never have said, yeah, that works. How does that work? And that's totally a davar shelo b'le'olam, right? Fine. So he's only suggesting that because I own it now, the fact that for the next 20 years I won't have anything to do with it means that we're all agreed that I can do something with an object that I'm not going to have any connection to at all for the next 20 years. And then magically when I buy it back, because of the theory that I was able right now to be makdish it, it becomes Kodesh. Now, in the case of the woman, which I agree is not the same, but is abstractly, interestingly similar. Why? Because it's true that it's not biyada now, but it's also true that there's a big advantage in the case of the Isha. Namely, it's not that there's going to be any change in terms of the presence of her hands and her ownership of the hands. They remain in her rishus the entire time. The only thing is that she cannot actually utilize that rishus because she made a commitment to somebody else that he's the only person that can say what's going to be done with those hands, right? So I say, says Rabbi Law, not being able to have anything in this field for the next 20 years is not a big enough chisaron to make you believe that it's a davar shelo b'le'olam. Well, the fact that currently you can't do something, but you do have control over this in the sense that it's physically present and it's your hands. You never give away your hands. It's just that you committed to how you're going to use your hands. I think that that basically is the same idea. That's what he says. Now, the obvious comeback to that is that there's no comparison between something that you can do now to something that you can't do now, even though the case where you can do it now does not give you any connection to the item, and the case where you can't do it now, you do have a connection to the item. Now, what are the two sides to this question? The two sides are like this. We've been taking into consideration as a Dover Poshet that there are two different levels of understanding a Dover Shelo Baal Olam, and they're exactly the same. A Dover Shelo Baal Olam is something that never was produced. So let's say you're selling the fruit of the tree that will appear in 3 years. I'm selling that to you. That's a davar shelo b'le'olam because the fruit don't exist. There's another sense of a Dover Shalom Ola Ola in which a woman is giving herself over to a husband, but she's currently a Goya, and therefore she can't be Mekabel that. So in that case, we're called, isn't she there? Yes, she's there, but the ability to deal with what's there is not there. So we said it's the same thing. If the thing doesn't exist, that's the equivalent of the rights not existing. It's exactly the same. Now what the Gemara is actually doing is taking that apart. And it's saying, is it necessarily exactly the same? Might it not be that the inability to do something with an item that is there is actually less of a problem of the Dover Shalom Baliolam than the thing not being there at all? Thank you, Elroi. Now, that's a nice reminder. That glass looks very familiar, Gabi. Very familiar. All right. So, do you understand, therefore, the interesting machlokas? What is more a Dover Shalom Bala Olam? Something where the thing doesn't exist or something where the rights don't exist? Interestingly enough, that's going to be the machlokas that we have right now between Rabbi Elah and Rabbi Yirmiyah. So I'm a Rabbi Elah. Uma ilu omer lecha viro, sade zu shani mocher lecha, l'she ekhena mimcha takdish, milokach. Are we not agreed that since I have the right to sell this, to be magish this field right now, a right that I'm about to lose because I'm going to sell it to you and then I can't do anything with it. And not only can't I do anything with it, I won't own it at all. I have nothing to do with it. I don't own it theoretically, and I don't own its right. I've given everything away to you. But we're agreed that the fact that I am able to affect the Hegdish now, that means that it's considered to be, anyway, a Dover Shabbat Olam. Well, I believe, says Rabbi Elah, the fact that the woman's hands exist and are hers is more likely to allow a Hegdish later, when it does become hers in the sense of her husband no longer has rights because of the gerishin, than where the hands don't exist at all because she sold them. She never sells her hands. So therefore, I hold that the actual presence of the thing is more important than my ability to use the thing vis-a-vis the din of a Dover Shalom Bala Olam. Matki Flor Rabbi Yirmiyah, that's ridiculous. It's not the same at all, for the obvious reason. In the case of where I say, Sada Zushani Mocher Lecha, Hashta Biadehi, for the next 5 minutes, is he able to make this Hegdash? Yes. If he forgoes the sale, I mean, he'll make it Hegdash, and then he won't be able to sell it. But what is that? Well, that's the point. Therefore, it's not a Dover Shalom Bala Olam in any way. What's the difference if in the interim, in the next 20 years, it disappears? That's not important, because the power to affect the Kenyan was there, or the power in this case to affect the Hegdash, was there at the time that he made the Hegdash, right? So therefore it'll be Chal 20 years in the future when he buys it back, despite the fact that buying it back is completely and totally as if he got a new field. That's Rabbi Yirmiyah's taina. Now, Rabbi Elah does not take that taina seriously for the reason we explained. Because Rabbi Yirmiyah is assuming that the rights to do something are the central issue of a Dover Shabbat Le'olam and Lo Bo Le'olam. Rabbi Elah is assuming that the existence of the thing is the problem in a Dover Shalom Bo Le'olam. And therefore, in the case of the woman, she never loses her hands. And she had never lost her hands. The only problem was she couldn't utilize them at this point because she had promised them to someone else. That's called a shibud. Well, but I mean, that's not really a Dover Shalom Bo Le'olam. Do you see those hands? Whose hands are those? Her husband's hands? No, those are her hands, says Rabbi Elah. So why is it a Dover Shalom Bo Le'olam? Interesting machloket about the theory of the Dover Shalom Bo Le'olam problem, Bichlal. Two completely different approaches. Is everybody clear on this? Because it gets more complicated. We have to just make sure that this simple machloket between Rabbi Elah and Rabbi Yirmiyah is our first step. We're okay? We can continue? Good. So now, I disagree, said Rabbi Yirmiyah. I'll tell you what I think. If you want to make it compared to something that we know, I'll tell you what we should properly compare it to. You know what it's like? Hello, dummy. Ella, lo omer lechaveiro. Because I understand what you're saying, okay? You're saying that not having the rights is basically the secondary issue to the existence. Is that so? Tell me, Rabbi Law, what would you say about a case of a mortgaged field? Now, remember that the mortgage works by you're taking my field in exchange for the loan, and now the field still belongs to me, obviously, when you take a mortgage. But you have the rights. That was, remember, the special mashkanta we've discussed in the Gemara. You have the rights to utilize the produce of the field for the next, let's say it's a 10-year mortgage, for the next 10 years. And the mortgage, will we will deduct every year the amount of the produce from the loan. So that at the end of the 10 years, we will have the field free and clear. So that means during the next 10 years, I do not have the right to do anything with it because I gave the rights to this guy that made the loan. But who's the real owner of the field? Me. Because it's only given as a mashkanta, correct? Well, you tell me, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, in the event of somebody doing exactly that, Allah Omer Lechaveiro, Sodazu Shem. Oh, sorry, I skipped ahead a little bit. I didn't finish Rabbi Yirmiyah's Taina. That this is like saying to a guy, we discussed this, but I didn't read it inside, that if you already sold the field, Rabbi La, if you already sold the field, can you say that Liksha Ekhena Mimcha Takdish, when I buy it back from you, it'll be Kodesh? Of course not. Now, of course, Rabbi Law doesn't consider that to be the same as all. Fine. That's what we just discussed. Because over there, if you already sold it, neither the field nor the rights to the field are in his rishos. Matki flor of Papa. Now, wait a minute, says Rav Papa to Rabbi Yirmiyah. That? How could you say that? It's not the same. I mean, if you already sold it, then psika miltai. You have nothing in it. But the whole point that Rabbi Law is making, my dear Rabbi Yirmiyah, is that when the woman gives somebody the rights to her hands, she is actually keeping the hands for herself. She's just allowing someone to use the hands. In this case, her husband. So if you want to make it comparable to a case, then make it comparable to this case. Let's see it inside. Me dummy, is that the same? By the sale, psika miltayu, but by the woman, mi psika miltayu, is it that she no longer has her hands? I'll tell you what it's like. It's like a mortgage. Hello, dummy. Hello, omer lecha v'ro sadezusha mashkanti lecha. So I gave this field to you as a mortgage. When I pay back the mortgage, then it should become hegdash. That's the case, isn't it? It's exactly this case. I mortgaged my hands to you, and I'm saying right now that when I get them back, how will I get them back? You'll give me a divorce. So then I get back my hands. And at that point, the hegdash should be chal. Now, that's exactly like the case of the mortgaged field. And you're arguing with Rabbi Law. I think Rabbi Law makes a heck of a lot of sense. Milo Kotcha, won't that be a proper hegdash right now? Matki flor of shisha bereid ravidi. This is beautiful because everybody's going back and forth and showing the small and subtle distinctions between one case and the other that may make a very big difference. Is there a prepayment penalty on the mortgage? Can I come back today and say to you, okay, I really appreciate the loan and I managed to get the money together. Here's the cash. I'm buying back my field and breaking your hold on it by paying off the mortgage. Can you do that? Yes. I mean, unless specifically the contract said that there is no way for you to prepay. You have to wait a full term. There are such mortgages. I mean, but obviously the bank defines what type of mortgage it is. A standard mortgage is not necessarily for a specific time and I can't pay you back. Doesn't that make a big difference? In the case of the field, The reason that it's not a problem for you to make that Hegdash is because it isn't really a Dover Shalom Bali Olam, since theoretically you could always get it. How could you get it? Pay back the mortgage right now. You want it to be Hegdash? Give the guy a call, make a transfer of funds, and then it's Hegdash. Now the woman, is it in her hands to get a get from you? Which is the only way she's going to get back the use of her hands. So maybe the Dover Shalom Bali Olam is not a problem when, at least in theory, it's in your hands to do. But over here, even in theory, it's not in her hands to do. So now we've injected a whole different question. So is the theoretical possibility enough to call it a Dover Shabala Ola? Therefore, says Rav Shisha Barei de Ravidi, I do not believe that Rav Papa's comparison is correct. Because Isha Biadala Hidgaresh? Surely you're not going to claim to me that a woman can force a divorce. So therefore, it's actually not the same. I'll tell you, if you want to make it compare to something, talk about a case of a mortgage that cannot be prepaid. So you made a mortgage for 10 years with the understanding that, look, I'm not making you this loan for you to go ahead and come back next month after I go through all of this trouble and you're going to pay me back. I'm interested in getting involved in this deal because I want to have that income for 10 years. If you're ready to leave it in my hands for 10 years, fine. Okay, so then that would be a mortgage with a specific time limit, right? And that is different. That's what it's similar to. Hello, Damia, if you want to tell me what it's similar to, the woman case is similar to a guy who took a mortgage for 10 years without the ability to pay it back earlier. So, hello, Damia, elola omer lechavero, sodezu, shemishkanti lecha le'eser shanim, at the end of that time, I will be paid it. And that would also be kodesh. Now there, if you want to prove something, now that's a good proof. Because in that case, the guy is currently like the woman. He doesn't have the theoretical potential to buy it back now. And afal pikein, we see that the fact that someone else currently owns those rights, nonetheless, he could make it kodesh. And that's the same as the case of the woman. There's no way for her to theoretically force a divorce. Currently, somebody else owns that right, but she owns her hands, so to speak. The body of the hands belong to her in the same way that the owner of the field owns the field. He just can't do anything with it while it's mortgaged. That's a great comparison. Now, if we're going to talk about this, then you're going to have to agree that in that case, despite the fact that when I borrow the money from you, I'm in a position where I cannot make it Hegdash now, I am able to make my interest in this field, which is the very body of the field, it's going to be enough to create a Hegdash when I get it back, even though I couldn't get it back now if I stood on my head. Okay, so that's what happens here. Oh, no, it's not. It's not. Why not? Because over there, you know that at the end of the 10 years, the mortgage will be over. How does this woman know that her marriage will ever be dissolved in divorce? Maybe it will never go back to her. So, fine. You've proven that you don't need the theoretical possibility of having control of the thing right now. But maybe the thing that makes it a Dover Shabala Olam is the fact that it is hardwired to be yours in 10 years. So that zechus is considered to be usable right now because it hasn't left you completely. Masha Inkain, in the case of the marriage, where the only way to regain control of your hands is by a divorce, then there is no particular runout time on this marriage. And therefore, it's not the same. So you see, we've taken into consideration all of these various factors in terms of how much control, when the control, theoretical control, what level of theoretical control, and bichlal, whether control is the issue or whether the presence is the issue. All of these things now finally have the beginning of a real theory of Dover Shalom Bali Olam, which is, it's a fantastically useful sugya for the entire issue, all over shots, okay? So therefore, Taina's Rav Ashi, if you have a built-in end to a contract, then you have more control than in a marriage if you're the woman and can't force a divorce. Isha mi itla kitsuta. In the case of the woman, was there a particular time limit to the marriage? No. So, okay. If, therefore, we are unable to give an explanation, because Rabbi Law has been unable to prove that it's really similar. And with all of these new added subtleties, we can certainly still see that the case of the Isha is more similar to a Dovah Shelo Bal Le'olam. We're left with our problem. So why do we need to be made for this neder? Because in the event that they get divorced, he won't be able to remarry her, because at that point her yadayim will be kadoshot, and he won't be able to nenene from her, etc., etc. No, not true. Unless you're all Dovah Shelo Bal Le'olam, but that's not, as we proved, that's not what the Mishnah can be explained as. So what are you going to tell me? Ah, says Rav Ashi, you guys missed the whole boat over here. We're talking about konamot. Remember, a konam could be similar, depending on how you want to make a neder that you're going to be basing on Nidrei Hekdesh. So a konam can be a konam because it's similar to Kedushas Domim, or if you really say it's Kikorban, it would be similar to Kedushas Haguf. What's the din of Kedushas Haguf when it comes to a she'ibud? Well, let's talk about that case. You own something and you borrowed money against that something. Let's say you had a car, right? So now you went ahead and you had the garage man fix your car. He gets a mechanic's lien on the car, correct? Until you pay back the price of the repair. Okay, you did not pay back the price of the repair. You're outraged at the price of the repair. And so you say, this car shall belong to Hekdesh. Well, since it's difficult to shecht the car and to give it the actual kinyan of a Kedushas Haguf, we'll have to substitute a case where the car was a shor and the mechanic's lien was actually a vet's lien. Okay, but you understand the idea. This is basically the shita that a horse and a car are essentially the same things, except, you know, instead of the round things, the horse has straight things. Instead of the electric headlights, the horse has eyes. But it's basically the same idea. Okay, so we understand that now this shor, if you make it hegdish, the mechanic is not going to say, sorry, you can't make it hegdish because I have a lien on it. Why not? Because the din is like Rava. Shaini konamot kedushat haguf dami. And Rava has shown us there are three things that cancel liens. And one of those things is hegdish. So if you're magdish something, so then what are you going to say? It's a Dovah Shelo Bal Le'olam because you don't own it. Why don't you own it? Because someone else has a lien on it. When I make hegdish, there goes his lien. So that's really the answer to the whole problem. And if that's the case, since hegdish, chometz, and shichrur, now these are all the same idea. Somebody has a lien. He has a lien against my chometz, this goy. So now the question is my chometz supposed to be destroyed for Pesach? And if not, it's going to end up being chometz shavah lava Pesach? Or do we say, since he has a lien on it, it's essentially his chometz? No. His lien is canceled. The chometz is mine. I'm the one that is over on the Isser, and the chometz becomes us. How about if somebody has a lien against my Eved? And I free my Eved. His lien is canceled. He'll have to go after me in some other way. But my very expensive Eved, who ends up being a diamond cutter and is worth a mint, and this guy was relying on his being able to collect my Eved, Baruch Avram is dreaming of Avadin this morning. Imagine how easy life would be if we only had all of those Avadim out in the garage. Now he's claiming to be a liberal now.
He would laugh back inside.
There we are, exactly. Okay. So the din is that if you're Meshachrer the Eved, then that person loses his lien and he's going to have to go after other property of yours. So that explains the whole issue, says Rav Ashi. What are we going around making a big deal over here? It's a Dover Shalom Baal Olam. It's a Konam. And a Konam isn't affected by a Shibud. What? Says the Gemara. Wait a second. Excuse me. Didn't we just say in the Mishnah Beferish that the reason that you're supposed to go ahead and be made for the Neder is because in the event that you divorce her, then the Neder will go into effect, and then it becomes Dover Shebein Olavei Na, because he's never going to be able to remarry her. That's what you said. Now, according to what Rav Ashi is saying, it has nothing to do with when you get divorced. It can be done right now, because the Baal only has a Shibud. And you're saying that Hekdesh is Mafkiya Midei Shibud. So why does the Mishnah say, better be made for, because when you get divorced, it'll be Chal. It'll be Chal right now. So Rav Ashi makes no sense at all. Ihalki asked the Gemara, why did Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who we're coming to explain here, why did he say, Shema Yigarshena? That's not the point. It's not because of Shema Yigarshena. It's because of now. True, says the Gemara. Now, this is a very strange answer. True, but add that little word, not to mention the fact that he also, Shema Yigashena, not to mention the fact. I mean, my God, we've got a neder that's going to be chal right now, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is sitting here wondering about Shema Yigashena. What are you talking about? What kind of answer is that? What do you mean, va'od? There's two problems. One problem is the neder is chal right now, and the other one is that in 20 years he might divorce her, and then the neder will be chal. What is that? That's really crazy. So on the surface, this Gemara's answer is absolutely weird. What's Va'od Shema Yigarshena? So what we need to understand is that there is a lot missing between the lines in this Gemara. And you know what's missing, because we've discussed it many times. I'm not sure whether Gavi wrote this down. Just in case, write it down again. Which is Almua Rabbanan L'Sheibuda Deba'al. We've talked about this very often. The Rabbanan have given, because of the protection of marriage, the Rabbanan strengthened, the Almua, the Rabbanan strengthened the Shibud of a Baal, but it cannot be overrun by Hekdesh. Because otherwise the woman is always going to be in a position in which she can make life hell for her by going into being Magdash. So how does Rava help us? Rava doesn't help us. What is he saying? Abai is claiming that the Mishnah makes perfectly good sense because even though it's not in her hands, it actually is in her hands because it's weird. Okay. But even though it's not in her hands, it actually is in her hands because the Hekdesh would be Mafkiya, the Shibud of the Baal. And there's another problem. The other problem is, what if he divorces her? Neither of those makes sense, right? Therefore, the brilliant explanation of the Ran in this case is that, look, if you take a look at this sugya, back in Ksuvas, over there the Gemara openly says that Almua Rabbanan L'Shibuda Deba'al. Why don't we talk about that problem here at all? Says the Ran, we are talking about it, gentlemen. We are? Yes. Because that's the only reasonable explanation to the meaning of Va'od Shema Yigarshena. So the whole point over here is that it's all one thing. The Shema Yigarshena with the idea of Rava is all one issue. Namely, since Mitzad Hadin, the actual Konam would be Chal, if it wouldn't be for the fact that the Rabbanan made a special Takana of Almua Rabbanan L'Shibuda Deba'al, therefore it makes sense to say Shema Yigarshena. Why? Because the meaning of the Almua Rabbanan L'Shibuda Deba'al is only to protect the marriage. The moment that he wants to divorce her, over there we look at it as if the neder was chal at the time that she made it. That's the idea. Because it turns out there wasn't much to protect in this marriage, since in the end they're getting divorced, and the only reason we made that protection was because we don't want them to get divorced, so we said, don't give the woman power over her husband. Okay, but over here they do get divorced. That's what the va'od. It's not a difference for her. Put the two together. Hegdish is mafkia bidei shibud. Now, you know that won't help over here because he's a husband. And husbands shibudim are not. But they got divorced for od. Taking into consideration that initially the Shema Yagarshena means that the Rabbana never put into place the protection policy for the husband, which is called Amur Rabbanan. Therefore, in this specific case, Taina's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, we've got a problem because putting it all together, you end up with a neder that will be the equivalent of having been chal in advance. And therefore, it's going to create havoc because he won't be able to remarry her. Because of that, he should be mefer. Very subtle, Dov. Beautifully interrelated points. Every single one of them is relevant to the final outcome in understanding Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri without needing to come on to believing that it has to be based on Adam Magdish Davar Shelo Bala Olam, which is what we were trying desperately to avoid because of the contradiction in Shmuel, who had passed in both like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and like Rabbi Yochanan HaSandor.